Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Advisor. Before we begin today, please do not forget to hit that like and subscribe button because without you, we cannot continue growing and thriving like we are. We appreciate you, we love you, and we're so grateful. Today, we bring back Deepak Parashar. So, today we're talking about lessons from Tornado Alley. And if you have not listened to our first episode or our last episode, we went into discussions about his meetings with the Dalai Lama. You really should go back and listen to that episode and then come back and listen to this one, because you're going to see a lot of synchronicities in the way we discuss energy. So, we're going to take you on an unforgettable chapter from Deepak Parashar's global journey into the raw, untamed heart of nature, the Great Plains of Tornado Alley. So Deepak is Senior Energy Global Projects Leader and the author of Life, the Spiritual Essence. So he didn't just witness tornadoes, he studied them up close. Most would run from it, but he ran toward it, seeking answers, not just in the wind, but in the why behind it. So in this episode, he shares what this one event taught him about stillness in chaos, the power of surrender, and how energy in its most primal form can mirror our inner storms. So these reflections shape the pages of his book, where science meets soul and every experience becomes a teacher. So if you ever wondered what a tornado has to do with consciousness, this episode is going to literally blow you away. It's really good to have you back. How are you doing?
So first of all, these are namaste to you. Big namaste to all our friends out there. I must say that while you were giving this marvelous introduction, I wanted to sort of just look behind to see who exactly you were referring to. But thank you, first of all, for for the kind and the gracious words. So as you mentioned, I want to discuss a series of life lessons learned, as you mentioned, from just one specific set of travels into primal Mother Nature, or in other words, down the Great Plains of Tornado Alley, fundamentally six states in Midwest USA, including Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, Colorado, Nebraska, and there's one other. But before we do that, just to augment to what you said, I want to just give you a brief genesis. What had happened was that while I was working on power installations the world over, working with cross-functional teams from over 30 countries, and it was very, very enthralling work. And that's when I happened to run into His Holiness the Dalai Lama of Tibet on a flight to Tokyo. This was in 2009. And Lisa, there were two other ancillary incidents within the 6 month period, just on or around there, including meeting the Vietnam veteran, who was shedding, he was shooting energy from a distance. And I'd also picked up one of the great scriptures of Hinduism. And what happened was these three events led to a material shift in my thinking. And what I mean by that is because, you see, Lisa, most of us, the majority of us, we are forced to lead extraordinarily structured lives. And you have to, because you have to discharge your responsibilities toward, towards your workplace, your comrades, your family, your social circles. But after the three incidents occurred, it was very unique. I began, this nagging thought came into my mind that, is this all that I'm ever going to be? 90 hours a week, 16 hours a day, weekend in, weekend out. Is this all that there is to life? And there was a unique shift in my thinking. You see, Lisa, I could have just sat back and rested on my laurels and said, "Hey, I met His Holiness, and been crowing until the cows come home." But I didn't do that. I sensed that there was something
You were
very unique.
craving more. How could you not crave more?
How could you not crave more? And at that point, something very unique took place, because if there were any shackles or any cuffs in my mind, they got blown off. And I began to realize, thanks to these three incidents alone, that there was knowledge in every single experience, not just through traditional materials like reading books or attending corporate training schools on leadership, which I've always been doing. But now I began to understand that, look, you have to gain knowledge from every single experience. And if you really look at the formal definition of meditation, it is all about progressively understanding the inner nature of an object or an experience. And I come across a program on TV where they interviewed Al Pacino, the actor, and they asked him, "What excites you?" You know what he did, Lisa? He put his hand on his cheek, smiled, and said, "Everything." And that's basically what happened. And all of a sudden, the floodgates let loose, and here I was, going into a stumbling journey of research as an engineer, experientially analyzing divinity, and that research took 14 years, touching 38 countries. And I was talking to somebody 2 days back, and they were talking about the book Life, the Spiritual Essence, and I was telling them, I said, it was almost like a spider dipped his legs in ink and then crawled across the page for 14 years. And all of a sudden, things just began to emanate. Knowledge just began to come out of the woodwork. And so what do I mean by an engineer examining divinity? So if I look at it another way, to put it another way, it's I began to understand how the substratum of energy, both material and subtle, interconnects all aspects of our existence under some form of corporate divinity or a celestial intelligence of some sort. Now, what do I mean by material and subtle energies? So these are energies that we experience every day in our lives: nature, people, places, culture, science and spirituality, leaders and leadership, religions, metaphysics, you name it. They all constitute a combination of material and subtle energies. And so hence began the journey of research. Now, briefly, just to tell you, so when I mentioned nature, people, places, so some of my travels over the 14 years range from going up into the Andes Mountains in Latin America, and I saw condors from a distance, and regrettably, I was hoping they'd come close, but they didn't. And then ranging on into the cacao farms of Ecuador, where I saw chocolate at the original pod level. It's actually salty, when you taste it. And I saw entire families, families of 30 thriving, leading lives close to nature. In fact, the gentleman who took me around, he told me a remarkable story. He said, Deepak, my grandfather, at the age of 84, had his first minor surgery, and he was really ticked off about that surgery. And he was saying that people routinely who live close to nature in Ecuador led lives up to 100. And I'd heard stories about the fishing villages in Japan, where you hear these similar stories. So all of a sudden, this interconnectedness is coming in. And then carrying on, I went up into the Atacama Desert in northern Chile because I wanted to see where they had done the testing for the Mars rover missions. And I tell you, Lisa, I went into one of the observatories at night, and for the first time, I saw the rings of Saturn and the moons of Jupiter, and the Ring Nebula. These are all things that you've seen on television, but now there it is. It's up in front
Yeah,
of
well,
your
it's
eyes.
totally different, right? In real life,
It's
you can
absolutely amazing.
feel it.
Yes, I oh, it was incredible. And then, I went up near the Arctic Circle to see the Northern Lights. And before we go anywhere else, because this is a discussion on nature, before we move forward, I'm going to recommend to every listener on the advisor, every person I can reach, that at least once in your life, go and see the Northern Lights. Because you see, when you're standing under a spectacle where it's 50% of the sky is just moving in waves, and you see how beautiful and magnanimous and pure and untouched that it is. And in fact, the gentleman who took us around, he was from the Inuit community, and he was telling us that his son had once mentioned that when a good group of people come together, the aurora comes out to dance. And boy, did it dance. And my son had come with me. It was minus 42 degrees. It was that cold, right? We're all freezing. And my son told me, he said, "Dad, you were yelling into the heavens." And he said, "Everybody else was yelling along with you." But, I truly had that touch of divinity. And, again, light energy, right? This is a direct light bridge into your greatest, into your highest self. And that's why people, when they go to see the Northern Lights, they come away as changed people. People go to get married and wedded in front of the lights. And, scriptures say that light energy forms the basis of our existence in increasing layers of purity guided by a divine intelligence, commencing from the atomic levels. And this is why you see a great reverence to light energies by way of, you name Jesus Christ at Mount Tabor, to the Hindu festival of Diwali, to Hanukkah, to votive candles. So once, before we move on, always, everybody, give it a one shot. Always go, try and go. Have you ever seen them yourself, Lisa? Do you ever go?
Yeah, they're near where I live. I was up north. I went to Yellowknife on a project, and they're supposed to be incredible in Yellowknife, but it was cloudy the whole time, so I didn't get to see them. But there is quite a few around where I live in Ontario, Canada. The colors are just magnificent. That green that paints the sky, it's no, like you're describing, it's a feeling. If you haven't seen them, yeah, you guys see some northern lights, you really want to experience what that feels like, because you can feel it makes all of life's problems, the little tiny things that we worry about, just melt away. And it shows us how small we actually are, yet how significant we actually are. It's like a combination of this holy moly moment where we realize like how vast the universe truly is.
Yes, and absolutely correct. Well, very well said. So anyway, carrying on, my travels took me east into very challenging locations like the concentration camps of Dachau and Auschwitz-Birkenau, because I wanted to see where the
What
divinity
was
was.
the
It's,
energy like there?
Lisa, that's we'll probably do that on the next podcast, I'm thinking. I mean,
Let's touch on it.
it took me 9 months to formulate where was the divinity amongst this mass extermination. And I would say the number one was the individual sacrifices made by some prisoners for others. Like, for
Yeah.
example, one particular priest took the he volunteered to take the place of another prisoner, and he died by starvation while singing hymns. Now there's
Wow.
divinity amidst all that. And when you go through those camps, I mean, it is really, yeah, we'll have a separate discussion, but I would say that was my top takeaway amongst, the very depressing energies. You could literally feel the overhang while you were there. So anyway, carrying on, I traveled the globe as part of, this integrated research, and that finally led into the book Life, the Spiritual Essence, which is designed for the tier one global professional to strive to be the absolute best in their endeavors. But it starts from understanding who you are as a person. So, sorry for the rather lengthy, but I wanted to just give you the, what happened, once the, all the cuffs opened up, and we'll talk about that in the lessons learned. So, why am I discussing nature today? Why did I pick this subject, right? Because it's a very deep subject. In fact, it took me some 6 weeks of thought, just to assimilate it. So, if you look at scriptures, right? And you look at the involution of the universe, or the progressive creation of the universe from a macro level, culminating in human life. And what I was very surprised is that when I bridged into the technical side, that science, and the theories like the Big Bang and other theories actually follow the scriptures very closely, in that the core elements of nature, what we call air, fire, water, earth, and then there's ether. Of course, ether is not a formal element recognized by science, but it's certainly within the spiritual community. So these elements are very intrinsic to our being. We have actually come from it. We've emanated from it as part of our creation today as human beings. And it was remarkable to see this to actually be able to read it and understand it. And regarding the interconnected nature of life, let me quote you what Dr. Edgar Mitchell said. And this is he was a NASA astronaut on Apollo 14 on the way back from the moon. And he said, "The biggest joy was on the way home. In my cockpit window, every 2 minutes, the Earth, the moon, the sun, and a whole 360-degree panorama of the heavens I could see. And that was a powerful, overwhelming experience. And suddenly I realized that the molecules of my body and the molecules of the spacecraft, the molecules in the body of my partners, were prototyped and manufactured in some ancient generation of stars. And that was an overwhelming sense of oneness, of connectedness." This is what this NASA astronaut said. And so the fact that we have emanated from nature and is part of us, this is why people are intrinsically attracted to places. They go to mountaintops, they go to hilltops, they go to seaside resort, to reflect, absorb, and hopefully they come back as better people. Now I've got one quiz question for you. What do you do if you meet a NASA shuttle astronaut? Because I met one, and he was a member of the core team that fixed the Hubble telescope. When they first put the Hubble up, and it was he went up to fix it. So he traveled 29 million miles in space, and I met him twice. In fact, he sent me blurbs for the book. So Lisa, what would you do if you ever met him? What would you say to him?
Yeah. Oh my God. Say, hey, how are you doing today? And then I don't know. It would have to be in the moment. But I would ask him how he was doing. And then I would probably ask him about what it felt like to see the world from that far away, what it felt like. Yeah, it would be questions about the what he saw and how it felt.
Wonderful answer. You know what I did? I just became quiet because what do you say to a
That's
man? To
that was my instinct. I didn't know what to say. I was like, I don't know. Like I would probably just stare at him and just wonder.
So, there's a time to speak and then there's a time to listen and absorb because what a perspective on life they have. So, anyway, that was just the introduction. So, coming back to the storm chasing. What I want to do is just break it down into, first of all, preconceptions. What I had in my mind before I went for the journey, and then the people that I met, and then the modus operandi and the sites, and then in leading into the lessons learned. Do you have any questions for me, Lisa, before we get going?
No, I think I would just like maybe for you to touch on the driving factor. What about tornadoes was calling you at that time?
Okay, well, we will discuss that. That's a great point. The simple answer is I wanted to just see how this type of energy worked up front, because again, the whole study was about energy, and I'd always been fascinated by storm systems and tornadoes. So I said, let's go take a look. So starting with preconceptions, what had happened
Did it scare
was,
you at all?
did it.
Did it scare you at all?
No, not at all. But there were reasons for that because the storm chase team that I picked and went with, they played it very safe. You see, there's a lot of storm chasers who go right into the edge of the storm. Sometimes they actually even, I know I have friends who've actually been absolutely close to, into those great storms, and they go on these very flat vehicles. And one of my friends, Mike Wharton, he was telling me that he was absolutely petrified. And at this, in the same breath, he told me that he has this intrinsic connection into nature that he cannot explain, and it's just it drives him and it motivates him. And again, when you meet the people, you find that they're all interconnected through nature. That through the purity of nature. Right now, it can be quite dangerous. And this is where each person, you have to use your judgment. You really have to do your due diligence to pick. Do not try and do this by yourself. I know a couple of people who actually tried it, and they ran into a few tight spots. But if you go with a well-managed professional storm chase company, you'll be okay. And I'll explain a little bit of that. So the preconceptions, right? So back in 1996, I'd seen a movie called Twister. Maybe you've heard of it
Love that movie.
with Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt, and you had all these support people
Oh man, I
in.
watched that movie like 100 times. I absolutely love that movie.
So what happened was that my initial thought was, when I saw the movie, is that all the people in that, the way they were personified, they were all a little bit off the charts. They were all off the wall. You couldn't quite take any of them seriously. Just a derivative was one of the support actors was Philip Seymour Hoffman. And he had this permanent grin etched into his face, and he was quoting, like, who could have thought, this occurred to me years later, who could have thought that this in fact turned out to be one of the greatest actors of our times, right? And but again, that goes to show you that never take things for granted. Always, don't judge, observe. It's a very key point. We are so quick to judge other people. So anyway, having said all that, so I was expecting a bunch of adrenaline junkies. I think that's the best way to put it, all who don't quite normally fit into society, right? So of course that got my engineer's mind going. And I said, okay, I think I'll let's give it a shot. So the only person in my family who decided to come along was my son. He said, "Dad, I'll come." I said, "Okay." So we flew into Oklahoma City Airport, and we went around to the shuttle point, for the pickup, and there was a gentleman standing there. And Lisa, I could tell, having myself lived in the UK for 10 years, I could tell he was a Brit, he was from England, and he was completely clean, head shaven. He was wearing t-shirt and jeans. He had big muscles, and he had tattoos all over. And I'm standing there thinking of my preconceptions, right? Saying, "Oh my Lord, what have I gotten myself and my son into? And is this what we're going to have to deal with, for a week?" So anyway, we get into the hotel, and then we went shopping. And I started to talk to him, and he started to tell me how he, as a kid, would do graffiti, using spray paint. He was mischievous, and then he translated that into a profession, and he showed me some of the pictures. Lisa, turns out he was one of the nicest people that you could meet in life. But how wrong I was in my preconceptions. So we then get to the next morning when we meet the rest of the rest of the clients and the tour directors. Now I'm starting to meet the likes of professors, psychologists, Google techies, doctors. I even met a lady who used to clip the toenails of lions at a zoo. And you started to see, this combined intelligence in a room. They were professional photographers. There were even TV anchors. I met a gentleman by the name of Dallas Raines. He's out on the West Coast, and he's a weatherman, and I think he's just completed 40 years as a TV anchor. And a sidebar from that is that Lisa, it has never ceased to amaze me, and this is part of my larger research, that how the unsaid cosmic laws put people with precise set of talents at a precise moment in time to give joy to millions. And I was telling Dallas, I said, "Dallas, I thought I was a charming person." I said, "Tell me about your persona. I've never met, it is rarely you meet someone with such a magnetic persona." And he just, laughed it off. And he was also a tornado magnet, because when he left the group and he was driving, one came pretty close to him, and all the other weather guys, they were all commenting on it. But long story short is that blown away out of the window was the fact that you're dealing with just adrenaline junkies. These were a very, very wonderful group of people, all brought together by the purity of nature. This is really, really, really interesting. So The next step is let's before do you have any questions, Lisa? Because I'll talk about the modus operandi now of the trip itself.
I think we have a good picture in our mind that you're the stage has been set and you're with this eclectic group of people that all have such unique qualities. And now you guys are all together and the power of your energy is about to unfold.
Very well said. Now the tour, the directors themselves, right? They were also a couple of them were professional weathermen. They, you know, one of them works at LAX airport, and but they what they do is they take time off in the summer to go down the Great Plains. And you know, the interesting thing, Lisa, is I also met along the way several well-known chasers. And what struck me was that these were people who, men and women, who led life on their own terms. They were not, you know, they were also, I would say, you know, if you, from an engineer perspective, if you know, if you draw a bell-shaped curve, right, you'll find that 80% of society would, you know, people would fit into a general bandwidth, you know, in the larger bell. I would say most of them were on the outliers of society, right? They were all, majority of them were reticent. They were very deep thinkers. The other thing I noticed is that there were many who had overcome great personal struggles to then come forward, you know, you know, do this journey. And that was very enlightening for me, that how we're in this all together. You know, we come down here to grow as people, and that's what, you know, they were doing. So now the modus operandi of the trip, typically, you know, you can pick a 5 night, 6 night trip, you can pick a 7 night trip. There are even 11 nights, you know, that you can go out. And what happens is you assemble at a base airport, and then typically two sets of vans, you know, go out. So now you're driving on average 500 miles a day. Okay. And it's all about, you know, being able to predict. And so what the tour directors would do is every morning they assemble you around 9 o'clock. They go through a series of the National Weather, you know, Storm Prediction Center charts. And it's all about being able to predict where they think the, you know, the cell is going to be. Now, what happens is typically most of these supercells, they travel in the northeast direction. Once in a while, you know, they can turn, and that's what, you know, the famous El Reno tornado that killed you know, some chasers. So what they do is they always try and keep you in the southeast hook of the supercell. That's where the tornadoes drop down. And that's from there. But at the same time, they have to navigate the existing road network. Okay. And they like to chase on, you know, in open country where you can see, you know, storm systems are even 50 miles away. It is absolutely fascinating. You know, you're driving down and all of a sudden they, you know, then they have a lot of interaction going back and forth, right? On and it's all about interactive,
Can you
strategic.
feel it in the air? And can is there different smells associated with it? Like when it's about to storm, you can smell the rain before it even comes. Is there stuff like that?
All the time. I mean, you know, typically what happens is the storms, they begin to form late afternoon, early evening. So that's when you can start to, you know, you can smell. It's absolutely fascinating, and there's a purity about it. You know, that is virtually impossible to define, but you have to sense and feel. And you know, I remember once we were out in one of the we were out. On the plains, you know, standing next to a farm, and these cows were over there, and all the cows came over to take a look at us, you know. And so you're mixing that smell in, and at the same time you can smell oh it we were once in a lightning thing, and you could smell the ozone. I mean, the you know, you could smell the burning. I mean, it was remarkable. So but anyway, coming back to it, it's all about interactive strategic positioning. Okay, this is what the tour directors have to do, and they have their charts with them all the time. So in the van, so they're always keeping a close eye. And I tell you, Lisa, I have dealt with leaders the world over. This is where my professional curiosity was aroused, in the fact how these men led from the front, men and women, and they did it with integrity and humor and a never give up motto. And while maintaining safety, they always maintain, and that, you know, they, of course, I mean, these guys have been doing it for 30 years. So there's this intuition, you know, that have, you know, animals work by instinct. We develop, you know, we work by developed instinct called intuition. And you could see the, you know, the professionalism in these people. So much for the setup. And so basically, what happens is you'll travel from place to place wherever the storms are. They predict it, and then at the end, sometimes they chase into the night, into late night. Now you see the lightning storms that are going up. But it can also be heartbreaking. Like I met a group of people coming in. They were just leaving. They'd been out on an 11-night tour, and Lisa, all they saw was lightning. That's it, because the weather just did not help. So there are also sometimes you have to go through positioning days. And what happens is what they'll say, okay, look, we think the next day after next, we think there's going to be a storm here, so we're going to drive 500 miles just to position. And now it's a relaxed day. You have time for leisurely lunch, leisurely dinner, and that's not what you're there for. Because when you're in the chase mode, it is all about grab and go. Grab your dinner or grab. Sometimes you don't even get the time to do that. And then eventually you'll stay. They'll find a motel for you at night out in the middle of the boonies, right? But that in itself is an enthralling experience, because you're going into the unknown. You don't know where you're headed, right? So it's a lot of fun. So that's the MO. So let me now tell you a little bit about what happens with the journey. So as I mentioned, the storms typically occur late afternoon to early evening. So it's not all rush, 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 right? So in the once you have the daily briefing in the morning, people then you have time to relax, listen to music, meditate a little bit, and what was very interesting to me, Lisa, is that when I first met the people, and they're total strangers, right? But now you're within a confined space, and you have to, there's an adjusting mechanism. You're starting to get to know the people. And what was amazing to me was that the conversation of three movies came to light just, on an ad hoc, ad lib basis. So I don't know if you've seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, City Slickers, with Billy Crystal, when he runs around, I think somewhere in Texas playing, they were playing cowhands. And also the Breakfast Club, where the five youngsters come together, for detention, and they become firm friends. And it's amazing, Lisa, that when you are interconnected through purity, like some of my greatest friends today are storm chasers. It was so unique to just be able to take part, and it's so different, to everything that you're doing. So let's talk. Oh, I must tell you this. So along the way, they'll give you convenience stops. You'll stop around little towns. We stopped in one town, Lisa, where there were 17 people. That's it, right? And there was an old library. They opened it up for us, and a couple came out, and they had been married for 71 years, right? And the question always came into my mind was, is it possible? Would I ever be able to live there? And more or less, the answer was no. I don't think I would be. It was just too remote for me. But it was very interesting to see the dynamics and how they operated. For example, how did they have medical services? Where were the medical services, right? If somebody falls sick. But of course, everybody copes. So let's. I'll move on now to the sites itself, right? That we saw. And I'll tell you, I sent you a picture of one of those great supercells, that's coming at you.
Yeah.
But buried in my eternal memory, they say, that some people believe in reincarnation, some believe in one life, some believe in two lives. However many lives that I make, I may live. It just burned in my memory, the sight of three supercells back to back. And they were
When you
about.
sent me that photo, do you recall that my initial thought was that I was looking at a mountain that was in a fog? It looked like, and now in retrospect, I think I saw the energy of the power of that, those cells together combined into this shape of like a powerful mountain. But that's what I saw when I saw that photo, the energy
Yeah,
of it.
they're some of the most beautiful. Like once we were traveling and we saw a mid-sized storm system, and the rain was coming down as patterns, like wave patterns. And Lisa, I was standing there in tears, And somebody told me later that he was in tears too. He said it was just so intensely beautiful. But the point was that what was remarkable about these three supercells was that they were about a mile wide each. So we must have been about 20 miles away. Incidentally, it's very difficult to gauge distances. When I saw the twin tornadoes, I thought we were 2 miles off, but they told me later, no, it was 5 miles. So it's very, very hard to gauge, right? But what you could see was, and this goes back to your question that, what did you sense when you went up? You could physically see the energy transferring from one supercell into the other. So, and how you could tell is that the first supercell strengthened. You could see the structure like a mothership started to form. And then it began to break down, and the second one started, to formulate, right? And then the third one, and then again it passed over. Incidentally, when they chase, they only like to chase isolated storms because somehow these, when you have a line of storms, they tend to break. You don't see tornadoes. It tends to negate the effect somehow. And the other thing, Lisa, is it's a lot harder to see a tornado than it is to see the Northern Lights because it takes a very specific set of circumstances. They're very technical terms, right? On how, and then it gets. Yeah. So, but the point is that you're seeing some of the greatest sights still, on the planet. And I want to tell you about something that, and I researched this over, but it's a throwback to my youth, right? When I was just past the toddler stage, my mother had once taken me out to see a great storm. It was at a distance, and there was a lot of lightning and stuff, and I'm yelling my head off, and she was telling me, she said, see how beautiful it is. I still remember this. This was, over a half a century ago, and here I was, 50 years later, standing in front of these great supercells, and that tells you about the interconnected nature of life, how we must embellish our children, because between the age of 6 to 13 is when they're the most impressionable. On my mother, I want to tell you that she was a person very grounded in wisdom, right? Like when she was a child, she had attended a prayer session of Mahatma Gandhi's when she was a kid. And then in her later years, she passed away fairly young. She did charity work with Mother Teresa. Now,
Wow.
can you imagine how fortunate a person can be able to receive this kind of knowledge as part of your growing up, and how that,
Yeah.
how important it is. But anyway, coming back to the great supercells, it's all about the yin and the yang. What happens is on one side you see great beauty, and then on the other hand, you see great destruction. And our hearts go out to the communities who have lost so much by way, of these storms. Like we went into one particular local, one small community where a rain-wrapped tornado had come at them. So what that means is that you can't see the tornado coming. It's actually wrapped in rain. But they think it's just a rainstorm coming at you. It's actually a tornado. And I tell you,
Wow.
Lisa, I saw a car tire on the roof. I mean, it is the type of destruction that you just, it is inconceivable. It is just something that you have to say, oh my Lord. And that's why, again, it's a very personal decision if you want to go on such a chase. But again, do your due diligence. If you ever do decide to go, do your due diligence and research. These days on ChatGPT, you'll get all the information that you need. So that's what. And now the other thing is the energy in the van rides in waves. So what I mean by that is that when like we were chasing one storm, because they typically start late afternoon, and then once the chase commences, you're just go, right? So we were chasing this storm for about 3 4 hours, and it just wasn't dropping a tornado. So everybody was a bit, they were feeling a little low, and all of a sudden, we heard all the cell phone emergency sirens go off, tornado warning, and the entire van erupted in yeah. And I'm saying, what is wrong with this picture, right? Normally you would never see that, but it was the total opposite. And then last but not the least, Lisa, regarding the sights, once the storm passes, now we were there once, and we were seeing the mammoth clouds forming, and you could see the sun shining, the rays of the sun shining through, and you saw these metallic orange, blue, red, just all merged in. And I was standing there listening. Now you can finally hear yourself, and I was listening to Hans Zimmer and A.R. Rahman and the likes of Vangelis. And if you try the combination of music to these, these are some of the greatest moments, right? There, where you get divinity in the moment. It was just extraordinary. So, any questions before we get into the conclusions?
No, I feel like it sounds like an episode. It sounds like a movie. You were on this incredible journey with all of this different energy and a collective group of people that were all on this journey together. And it just goes to show the power of community and numbers and how vast our universe really is. These storms, they come through and they destroy. But the destruction then opens a path for new growth and development. And I think that's, that reflects how real life actually works. And just for instance, when there's a fire in the forest, how that, stimulates new growth in the ground and then it grows even stronger and more vast and more powerful. And I just find it so fascinating that that we worry about such trivial things in life, that we worry about missing our favorite TV show when you can walk outside and observe nature. And I think that's the most significant thing. So it sounds like an incredible adventure.
Yes. So let me, so I compiled just a few lessons learned, right? So I'm just going to briefly go through them. So the first one, obviously, is the interactive leadership of these two directors, right? They are leading in the moment, like the training of special forces the world over. They train you to, they don't sit back and lament, why am I in a situation? Of course, in this case, it's a managed thing. You're gone on a chase, but then they're always interactively working, and they do it with safety and integrity and never give up
Was there
motto.
ever any like disagreements between any of you guys?
No, not once. Not even once. And that, again, that also reinforces the way that they manage everyone. They even swap people around in the van so you get to know each other, between the two vans. And it's just a royal, unique party going on. And it's the only time I found, Lisa, that I could not work because, again, you're sitting, you're driving, 500 miles a day. You're always in a moving van. You can check emails, right? But you can't really respond. You can't have conference calls, right? Because, out of courtesy for the other guy. It was the only time that I could not actually work. And of course, by the time you get in, into the motels at night, sometimes it's 10 o'clock at night. Who wants to work then? You're too tired. And then again, you're on the go. But again, it's a bit of a backstretch. This is not an easy journey. As they say that, to achieve extraordinarily, you have to face some suffering. And this is just a classic example of it, right? That to get to and see those sites, I ended up seeing 14 tornadoes in total. I actually lost track, including twin tornadoes. We came to, I think, about a mile and a half of a tornado. And but again, it was, we were again, southeast, and they parked us. And now you step outside, and we were seeing roughly, I'd say, 50, 60 mile an hour winds. And it was just fascinating.
Wow.
And I saw one storm, one mothership. They later said that it was actually the size of the state of Kansas. That was the size of the supercell.
Wow,
Can
that's
you?
incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible. So we get through that. So the second point is learn to deal with the ups and downs of life, right? And again, it's the yin and the yang. You have to be equanimous because the energy in the van rides in waves. Sometimes you're high, sometimes you're low, and you see all these varying reactions, amongst the people. And I'm sitting there like an engineer, lapping it all in, right? For as part of the interactive research. The third is, and this is a derivative, is if you can get into synchronicity with the rhythms of nature on a daily basis. So, for example, if you start your day early, right, and you go and join the birds having a party outside at 6 o'clock, and it's also the time when, the body is most receptive to divine energies of the creator. And naturally, though, this is why people the world over lend themselves into holistic activities, like yoga and the like. So, if you can get into the rhythm, you start your day with nature, you're more than likely bound to have an excellent day. It really sets the stage for you, by the time you commence a day at 8 o'clock. Next one, of course, is preconceptions. As mentioned, don't judge, observe. It's a, we all have this tendency to go and and judge others. And if you can develop this extraordinary situational awareness in any situation, what I was mentioning, that there's knowledge to be gleaned out of every single, and you link that with a humility and a gratefulness, as I mentioned earlier, the universe opens up very, very interesting corridors of knowledge. Take your gloves off, lift your preconceptions. You will find in your fears, you will find that most of your fears are so transitory in life, right? And if you can do that, it opens up avenues for you that you could not have possibly have foreseen earlier. You break fear boundaries that, oh, this is what I'm meant to be doing all my life, right? Go out and experiment for yourself. And this applies to people of any age. As they say that, well, there's a time to experiment and this, but if you have this attitude, you can do this at 75. I mean, it's just it's really fascinating how you can develop yourself. Try and interconnect the dots of your life. So what I, as I mentioned earlier, what I mean by that is that if you sit back and introspect, a lot of people will go for meditation, but first of all, introspect on who you are, right? What you will find is that you probably took maybe a set of key decisions, maybe no more than 3 to 6, that shaped your pathway to where you are, to who you are today. And what happens, Lisa, is that if you can do that, it will then leapfrog you in the appropriate direction for all your future steps. And last but not the least, Lisa, understand that we are cosmic visitors in time. You see, when you look at this, when you go out on the Great Plains and you see how insignificant you are compared to the hand of Mother Nature, the takeaway for me was that help other people the best you can. Move from the I into the we and try and leave the world a slightly better place for others. And that's really what you call the miracle of life, that when people come together to help others, it's not all about you, but again, it's all about taking personal responsibility. Because if you want to help others, first try and help yourself. So, and so, here, and this is where you have to tap into your divinity within.
Yeah, that's incredible. So many good lessons that you learned on your travels about life. What comes to mind for me is that since we are all so interconnected and we're all part of the same consciousness, tornadoes and storms and nature is absolutely limitless. And because we're all so interconnected, that also means that we're limitless and we're powerful, just as powerful as those storms in our own ways. And when we learn who we really are, that's when we can really tap into our power. So I love how you talked about, judgment and just letting our guard down and enjoying the simple things and going on adventures. I feel like that's what life's about. Yeah. So thank you so much for being here and for telling your story. I want to go on a storm chase now. I feel like going outside. Actually, it looks like it's going to storm where I live, actually, and I'm excited about it.
You should do that. And thank you for having me on the show, Lisa. I really appreciate it. And a big, big namaste to all our friends out there.
Yes. You guys, you just heard from Deepak Parashar, and he has a podcast on our channel. And we are now on Megaphone, and that is mega news. So please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. Just like Deepak said, like get outside, observe nature, ground. Let's figure out who we really are so we can really tap into our powers. Until next time, take care, everybody.